will be no trial, charges, or even a disciplinary hearing for two police officers involved in killing an 80-year-old woman inside her home with a tear gas grenade. It's the latest example of French cops hurting citizens and not facing even minor consequences. At the start of the Yellow Vest movement in 2018, police were clashing with protesters in the Mediterranean city of Marseille. Algerian national Zineb Redouane was in her fourth-floor apartment trying to close her shutters when she was shot and killed. Redouane was on the phone with her daughter at the time of the incident, and she reportedly said, quote, "He targeted me. The police targeted me. I made eye contact with two policemen. One fired at me. Then they got in their car and left," end quote. She died the next day from her injuries.
Et aujourd'hui?
We have suffered repression, which no president has ever permitted in the history of this country. We are not at war. We are not enemies. But the government has waged war against us simply because we oppose their decisions. Just for that, many have paid dearly.
For months, the Interior Minister falsely claimed that the death had nothing to do with the grenade and that she died of cardiac arrest. Half of Redouane's face was collapsed in by the grenade, and she inhaled large amounts of tear gas.
On a subi une répression.
The government has not given one word of apology or one moment of compassion towards any victims of police brutality during the Yellow Vest era. Also, there has not been one word of condemnation for the police who have committed these acts. None of the police have been convicted, even though people have been blinded, crippled, and lost. Of course, our heart goes out to the grieving family, and the Yellow Vest will continue to remember Zineb Redouane and to demand justice.
Her family has sued the Interior Minister and other senior officials for concealing and interfering with evidence. A ballistics investigation by the NGO Disclose suggested that police fired directly at Redouane's window. Many wonder if there might have been some admission of wrongdoing if the victim wasn't Arab. That appears likely, but she also joins a Yellow Vest-related casualty list, which includes 5,000 people seriously hurt, 1,000 critically injured, scores maimed for life, and 11 other deaths. Amin Mazahari, Paris.
Meet Miqdad Kawasme, a Palestinian prisoner held in an Israeli jail without charge or trial under the regime's so-called administrative detention policy. He's among the six inmates who went on hunger strike in protest of their indefinite imprisonment weeks ago. Sunday marked the 109th day since he last ate. Israeli medics forcibly injected him with nutrients on the 92nd day of its strike. Other hunger strikers are Kayed Al-Fasfus, Ala Arraj, Hisham Abu Hawash, Ayad Huraimi, and Luay Al-Ashqar. The hunger strikers, particularly Fasfus and Kawasme, are grappling with deteriorating health conditions, with Palestinian officials warning that the inmates are at immediate risk of death. On Sunday, over 4,500 Palestinians in different Israeli jails also rejected their meals in solidarity with the six hunger strikers. Palestinians in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip have held sit-ins and demonstrations over the past weeks demanding their immediate release. The United Nations Human Rights Commission has expressed grave concern over the lives of the prisoners. The UN body also criticized Israel's administrative detention practice, calling it a violation of international law. But no word or action is coming from Israel's powerful and influential Western allies. Experts believe the striking similarities they see with Israel to be the reason.
There is a tremendous imbalance of power in the world. And just as we see the tremendous crimes carried out by Western imperialist powers, the ongoing use of illegal sanctions, unilateral coercive measures to starve countries, invasions and occupations, the unstinting support, funding, and collaboration with the Zionist occupation of Palestine is part and parcel of those crimes.
Palestinian inmates regularly stage hunger strikes in protest at their illegal detention and harsh conditions in Israeli jail. What they're fighting for are their most basic and fundamental rights.
Iran's nuclear deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, has been in the spotlight for quite some time now, after the U.S. in May 2018 unilaterally withdrew from it and reinstated sanctions on the Islamic Republic. In recent months, all eyes have been on Iran to see what approach it takes over the JCPOA after the country's new administration, led by President Ebrahim Raisi, came to power in August.
We support the negotiations that guarantee our national interests, but Iran will not tie its economy and the lives of its people to the negotiations, nor will it allow negotiations for the sake of negotiations. We will not let the negotiations become attritional.
When the administration of President Joe Biden took office in January, Iran and the remaining parties to the JCPOA held six rounds of talks in the Austrian capital before they were suspended in June due to Washington's failure to remove the sanctions. The U.S. and its Western allies exerted pressure on Iran over the past months to resume the talks, but Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian said Iran will first review the previous Vienna negotiations and then start talks with Russia, China, the UK, France and Germany, known as the P4 plus 1 group. Just last week, Deputy Foreign Minister Ali Bagheri Kani said Iran and the EU agreed that Tehran and the P4 plus 1 start talks on November 29th. He stressed that the talks should result in the removal of sanctions on Iran. The terminology that the Iranian official has used for the upcoming talks attaches significance to Tehran's approach towards the JCPOA. The term start conveys the message that Iran seeks to begin result-oriented negotiations. Talks with the aim of removing sanctions indicates that the revival of the JCPOA and the U.S. return to the deal is not of substantial importance to Iran. What matters is the removal of all sanctions under various titles in action and not on paper. The U.S. has been trying to push Iran to succumb to its demands via the so-called maximum pressure campaign that was launched by the Trump administration following its unilateral JCPOA pullout. But such a pressure campaign has backfired, since Iran has strengthened its defense capabilities, advanced its nuclear program, and begun to enrich uranium to the 60% level. Now, the ball is in the court of the U.S. and its Western allies. They should decide before November 29th on whether they want to take a lesson from the so-called maximum pressure campaign, which top White House officials have explicitly branded as a failed policy, or go on with their anti-Iran agenda. The new Iranian government believes that national interests will be achieved by increasing the country's power. What is certain for now is that the speed of Iran's enrichment shows that the country will not accept restrictions on its nuclear activities in case of non-compliance by the United States.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Power of Truth. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the power of truth. The truth has definitely a big power. Why? Because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made everything on the basis of truth, which is also known as haqq. Generally, we have the literal translation of haqq as rightly guided or right, but the truth is the proper translation. Therefore, when we talk about the truth and we talk about the haqq, it has a big power. When we see that a person is on the right side and there are some people on the wrong side, the one who is on the right side, he talks firmly, he talks with a confidence that this confidence tells us, yes, he is right. He is on the right side. He is truth. He is on the truth. And therefore, we inclined towards him. He takes us towards himself. So this is the power of truth that we notice. And if someone is not on the truth, we see they bring different excuses in order to prove their argument. The argument which is not on the basis of truth, there are like the people that bring mere excuses, different excuses in order to prove that yes, they are on the right side. But obviously we all know that such things do not help, even in the courts or in general discussions. Therefore, it is said even about the lie, that lie is one of the greatest sins that people perform. So we need to be very much careful while talking and while performing and while helping someone.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is farstoday.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the power of truth, and we said we need to be very much careful while performing our actions. If you want to help someone, if you want to be with someone, see whether he or she is on truth or not. And one thing we must learn about the truth is that truth does not need any evidence. It has power within itself, that when someone talks and when someone tells the truth, it enters into the hearts of the people. That's the power which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given to the truth, that when a person is on the truth, when he says something, it enters into the hearts. Now there are different reasons why people do not accept the truth. That's another discussion. It can be because of the sins that we perform. It can be because of our personal desires. It can be because of our school towards which we are inclined, the thoughts that we have. Maybe it is not beneficial for us that we are not accepting this. But generally, when we talk about the truth, it is the truth that enters into the hearts of the people. Even the person who opposes the truth, he even knows that this guy is saying the truth. So therefore, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has sent his prophets by ordering them to call people towards the truth. And therefore, because they were calling people towards the truth, it was the power of the truth that people were converted. Therefore, we must be with the truth, inshaAllah ta'ala. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at farstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
A Pentagon report treats the killing of an Afghan family as an innocent mistake and uphold the U.S. tradition of excusing war crimes. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Jeremy Scahill, journalist. This article is published under the heading U.S. Absolves Drone Killers and Persecutes Whistleblowers. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. After the terrorist attack on the airport in Kabul, Afghanistan's capital, that killed more than 170 Afghan civilians and 13 U.S. troops, President Joe Biden issued a warning to fighters from Daesh. "We will hunt you down and make you pay," he said on August 26th. 3 days later, Biden authorized a drone strike that the U.S. claimed took out a dangerous cell of ISIS, intent on staging another attack on the Kabul airport. Biden held up this strike and another one a day earlier as evidence of his commitment to take the fight to the terrorists in Afghanistan, even as he declared an end to the 20-year war there. "We struck ISIS-K remotely days after they murdered 13 of our service members and dozens of innocent Afghans," he said in a White House speech, adding, "And to ISIS-K, we are not done with you yet." But the Kabul strike, which targeted a white Toyota Corolla, did not kill any members of Daesh. The victims were 10 civilians, 7 of them children. The driver of the car, Zimari Ahmadi, was a respected employee of a U.S. aid organization. Following a New York Times investigation that fully exposed the lie of the U.S. version of events, the Pentagon and the White House admitted that they had killed innocent civilians, calling it a horrible tragedy of war. Recently, the Pentagon released a summary of its classified review into the attack, which it originally hailed as a righteous strike that had thwarted an imminent terror plot. The results were predictable. The report recommended that no personnel be held responsible for the murder of 10 civilians. "There is no criminal negligence," as the report put it. The fact that the U.S. military spent 8 hours surveilling the targets, that a child could be seen in its own footage minutes before the strike, this was written off as a fog of war moment. The operators conducting the strike had a genuine belief that there was an imminent threat to the U.S. forces, asserted the Air Force's Inspector General Lieutenant Sami D. said. "They committed a mistake," he said, "not a crime. The U.S. has promised to pay restitution to the survivors of the drone strike. This is part of a long-standing U.S. tradition to treat its widespread killings of civilians in the so-called War on Terror as innocent mistakes made in pursuit of peace and security." The general who conducted the review days after says he has made recommendations on how to tinker with targeted killing operations to reduce the likelihood of other honest mistakes, as the Pentagon regards them, that wipe out entire families. None of this is new. It is a cycle that got into high gear under President Barack Obama when Biden was vice president, continued during the Donald Trump presidency, and is not relenting in the Biden era. As the Pentagon absolves itself of this crime, the Biden administration is pushing ahead with its persecution of whistleblowers who exposed this system of killing innocents. Daniel Hale, a military veteran who pleaded guilty to disclosing classified documents that exposed lethal weaknesses in the drone program, is serving 4 years in prison. Prosecutors said those documents formed the basis for the drone papers, a series of investigative articles published by The Intercept. Among other revelations, Hale's documents exposed how as many as 9 out of 10 victims of U.S. drone strikes in Afghanistan were not intended targets. In Biden's recent drone strike, 10 of 10 were innocent civilians. While Hale was indicted under the Espionage Act during Trump's tenure, Biden's Justice Department has gone after him with a vengeance. In October, Hale was inexplicably transferred to a communications management unit at the U.S. Penitentiary at Marion in southern Illinois. CMUs are used to severely limit a prisoner's ability to communicate with the outside world, subject them to extreme periods of isolation, and allow for intensified surveillance of their communications and visits. CMUs are regularly labeled as terrorist units. And as the Pentagon's mountain of lies about the August drone strike in Afghanistan came tumbling down, the Biden administration continued its quest to extradite WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, being held in the UK for the offense of publishing evidence of U.S. war crimes. The Biden administration has made clear that it will uphold the long U.S. tradition of exonerating its killers and punishing those who expose them.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was the fifth divinely appointed Imam among the household of the Holy Prophet. He was the son of the fourth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn, alayhi salam. Now all historians and traditionalists of Islam are unanimous that among the descendants of Imam Hassan and Imam Husayn, a maximum of religious sciences were expounded by Imam Muhammad al-Baqir. That is why the title of al-Baqir was given to the Imam, which denotes one who splits knowledge. Imam al-Baqir contributed greatly to the science of Quranic exegesis, scholastic theory, religious law, and Islamic jurisprudence, among many other subjects.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. My name is Muhammad, and I'm invited by Brother Mahdi to this segment of the program. Today, I'd like to read to you a passage about Islamic lifestyle according to Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. This passage is extracted from a book titled The Life of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Baqir, written by the great Iraqi Muslim historian and scholar Allama Baqir Sharif al-Qurashi. This great Muslim scholar and historian was born in 1344 AH in the city of Najaf. He's well known for his books on the biography and conduct of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. Please stay with me. Imam al-Baqir, peace be upon him, once said to his companions, "Shall I tell you about the thing that drives away the oppressor ruler and the Satan from you?" "Yes, tell us, do it," replied one of his companions by the name of Abu Hamza. Imam al-Baqir, peace be upon him, said, "Give alms early in the morning, for it blackens the Satan's face and breaks the greediness of the oppressor ruler on that days of yours. Love each other for Allah. Help each other with the good deeds, for such deeds put end to the Satan and the oppressive ruler. Insist on asking Allah for forgiveness, for such insistence erases sins."
Welcome back to your listeners. It's great to have you with us on the program. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, when talking about the different conversations and dialogues that Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam had with his companions and his friends, his family members and his relatives, and in reality with the people in general, we find that these conversations are full of words of wisdom. They are truly golden conversations, if you will, conversations that at times are quite short, but profound and have a world of meaning and wisdom. So Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam was asked once in one of these conversations, "Why is it that misfortunes and tragedies and calamities befall a a human being. It is interesting and perhaps even unfortunate that sometimes we believe that if we are on the straight path, if we are on the Sirat al-Mustaqim, the straight path of Allah, if we are good followers of the religion, if we have complete faith in Allah, if we are doers of good and righteous deeds, then no misfortune will befall us, no tragedy will befall us, no hardship will ever come around. When in reality, the truth is the opposite. As it is said in the traditions, heaven is surrounded by hardships and hell is surrounded by pleasures. So in this conversation, Imam al-Baqir says that what is it that makes misfortunes come down upon a human being? Well, Imam al-Baqir says that sins make misfortunes strike the servant. So dear friends, if we are being plagued by different kinds of trials and tribulations, perhaps one of the reasons is that our sins have increased to such an extent that we have become legible for misfortunes and tragedies and calamities to befall us. And so before we go and blame Allah for our troubles and our trials and our tribulations, perhaps we should look inwards and see what it is that we are doing wrong, which has resulted in the bringing down of misfortunes upon our heads. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Baqir, alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Hamza Saudagar.
To try to relate our condition to the conditions of Imam al-Baqir, see some parallels, although it's not exactly the same. We do have some differences here. But I'm going to focus on the similarities. And then look at Imam al-Baqir, salamullahi alayhi, what he presented. There's a methodology that he presented. So the conditions that we have are the conditions very similar. You don't have too much of the actual sayings of the Ahlul Bayt, the actual sayings of the Prophet, available to the masses where they can see what the Prophet himself said, what the Ahlul Bayt themselves said. And there are a lot of attributions, there's a lot of narrations attributing words and actions to the Ahlul Bayt. And that combination creates a state of confusion. I think that anyone that can really look at and observe the Muslim community, and even within the Shia community, if you look at the Shia community outside of Muslim lands, I think confusion is the best description of it. We don't need any outsiders. We are fighting each other. We have found it to be more important to fight each other based on a certain understanding or the other understanding than to be together and look at what others are doing against us, those who are against us, identifying those who are against us. There's a lot of people that aren't against us. We need to have thoughts and plans for that as well. But there are those who are definitely against us. Without looking at that, we find it more interesting, intriguing to be at each other's throats and fight each other about this.
Thank you. Thank you very much, dear friends, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
The birth of a baby sloth at an uncharacteristically hasty speed has surprised London zookeepers. A tiny two-toed sloth named Terry was born to a mother, Marilyn, at the weekend. The zookeepers say there was no sign at all that Marilyn was going into labor when they checked her in the morning. However, less than an hour, they spotted something like a tiny arm tucked into her tummy. Marilyn had quietly delivered the baby with no fuss at all while her keepers were chopping up sweet potatoes for her breakfast. The mother and baby are said to be doing well, but the zookeepers still don't know the sex of the baby.
Modern technology has changed our lives in countless ways, with robots now preparing to lend a hand in operation rooms. Surgical robots are on display at the 4th China International Import Expo. One of the machines, dubbed Mesa X, gives assistance in spinal surgery. Employing the robot can lessen bleeding by 50% compared to open surgeries. Another one assists doctors to perform interventional surgeries.
Guide valves in the vessels can be controlled even less than 1 millimeter. This is not cannot be achieved by the human hands. With the great, I think, market impact from this showcase, we successfully performed a first case PCI in Hainan Boao on March 13th.
The producers say surgical robots will soon operate in more hospitals around China. Therefore, training centers have been established to help surgeons learn how to operate the new generation of surgical robots.
A tigress belonging to the endangered Bengal species has given birth to four cubs at the Mexican Zoo, bringing joy and hope to wildlife enthusiasts. The four were born in the San Jorge Park in the city of Ciudad Juarez on October 10th. Nearly a month on, they are in good health. That is good news, because usually when multiple cubs are born, not all of them survive. Zoo officials have not yet determined the sex of the newborn cubs. That is because their mother lets out a roar when the vets are nearby. Bengal tigers are endangered for two reasons: poaching and the destruction of their natural habitat. Here's what you can call killing two birds with one stone. Classic car lovers have gone on an exciting rally to see an erupting volcano. The event, organized by Beshbuk Rallies, happened on a Saturday. Motorists taking part in the vintage rally had the unique opportunity to witness a volcano erupting ash and smoke. Most of the participants tried to get as close as they could to the volcano, but there were also those who chose to take other vehicles because they were afraid that their precious antique cars would be damaged.
Workers digging gas pipes in the Peruvian capital Lima have discovered a cemetery dating back to millennia. Archaeologists have recovered six bodies, including those of children. All of them were buried in a seated position. The site also yielded about 40 burial vessels. The findings are thought to belong to the culture known as white on red, which settled on the central coast of Peru centuries ago during the pre-Hispanic era.
Often, it does not take much to bring about positive social change. In Johannesburg, a group of painters are creating artworks on the trolleys of street recyclers. Reason? To encourage bystanders to look up and notice the work recyclers, locally known as reclaimers, do in the community.
I like my work to have meaning, so when I get to paint and become a part of a project like this, it's great for me, you know, because it's not every day we get to like do stuff like this, so yeah.
Up until now, they were just filthy looking jumbo bags with recyclable waste wheeling along the streets. But thanks to graffiti artists who are giving them a makeover with bold and bright designs to help identify and protect the recyclers. Artists say their goal is to build a relationship between neighborhood residents and waste pickers. The reclaimers roam around the city day and night, with some motorists even considering them a risk as the trolleys are not always visible. There are some 6,000 reclaimers in Johannesburg who make a living collecting, sorting, recycling garbage. It's a messy job, but they do it anyway. A group of women are joining hands to protect one of India's key natural sites that is also on UNESCO's heritage list, the Western Ghats, a mountain chain that's facing severe deforestation. The 27 members of this all-female task force are doing all they can to protect the area's rare ferns, mosses, and thousands of other plants. They're using a variety of gardening tools and techniques to preserve species from all over the mountains. Not only that, but they also make artificial conditions and habitats for endangered species from other parts of the world, mainly those affected by climate change. One of the conservationists explained that what they are doing is actually helping the forest regenerate.
We have witnessed the birth of a forest, and that's a very powerful thing. You know, the mind is filled with the ghastly stories of forests being cut, like the Amazon or like the Western Ghats, but here we're witness to the birth of forests as well, and that is the forest itself birthing itself, you see.
The Western Ghats Mountains are home to nearly 5,000 species of flowering plants, but many of them are globally threatened. Only less than half of the area's flora is currently under conservation. Scientists say the outlook for the mountain is very concerning. Carbon dioxide is one of the causes of global warming, but can we get rid of it to save our planet? A Swiss firm has come up with a novel idea to store CO2 underground and turn it into rocks. Company Climeworks has started operating the world's largest direct air carbon capture and storage plant called Okra in Iceland, located in Hershey. Okra is entirely run on renewable energy. It sucks carbon dioxide directly from the air and buries it as rocks deep underground to be mineralized. Usually, a natural process takes hundreds of thousands of years to turn the gas into basaltic rocks. But here, it takes up to 2 years for the CO2 to turn into white crystals.
Once the carbon dioxide is captured, it will be dissolved in water, and here we are at the injection site. The carbon dioxide dissolved in water will come through this pipe into the well, where it will be injected into the volcanic rock at a depth of between 800 meters and 2 kilometers.
The plant is said to be removing 4,000 tons of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere each year. The amount is too little to save the planet from carbon emissions, as climate modeling suggests the world needs to eliminate several billion tons a per year by 2050. Here we have to take into account the saying of the head of ORCA that we have to learn to walk before we can run.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Legends never die. So 1 year after his death, Argentinians are remembering their hero on his birthday. And that's no one but their legendary football player, Diego Maradona. It would have been Maradona's 61st birthday this year. People all around the country, including in the capital, Buenos Aires, remembered their iconic figure in ceremonies over the weekend. In the city of Rosario, a giant monument was inaugurated in honor of the football star. You can see on your screens fans gathering there in celebration. They say Maradona's love still runs in the veins of Argentinians. Amsterdam, the capital of the Netherlands, is riddled with waterways through which thousands of boats pass each day. Soon, the city may also be hosting self-driving vessels. Amsterdam's Institute for Advanced Metropolitan Solutions has devised an autonomous boat that can cross the city's busy canals without the help of a conductor. The watercraft, named a rowboat, is the size of a small car. The developers intend to use the boats for tasks ranging from transporting people to collecting trash. They think it can also be used for less conventional purposes, like preventing oil spills or forming a temporary bridge. Amsterdam's authorities are considering locations for a trash collection pilot project starting early next year. One of the disastrous effects of climate change has been the loss of glaciers worldwide. People around the world are trying new ways to tackle this problem. Now, a team of Chilean conservationists have come up with a creative project to protect glaciers and prevent water loss. The project is called Nilus. Winter rains are collected in cone-like structures called stupas. Experts from Chile are using a technology that was first developed in India to make these man-made glaciers. The water is then later used in the dry summer months. Chile has been experiencing a severe drought for years. Nilus director Enrique Gilona says the project hopes to address water shortages in the country.
Here we are not creating new water. Water is something that is in nature already. It has a cycle, but clearly it has been affected by the effects of the great climate change, which we are facing. And we are looking for a solution that actually allows us to protect this water for a longer time in the mountain range, to be able to deliver it downstream toward the communities.
The goal is to store some 100 million liters of water across 50 stupas next year. This would be enough water to supply 100,000 people for 3 months. The first prototype was erected in park arenas, an area known for its glaciers surrounding the volcano, the highest parts of the mountain region. Researchers and activists have warned that glaciers in the Andes Mountains have been receding in recent years. They blame climate change for the loss of glaciers and water shortages. A photo on social media, an article, or a TV program can all draw attention to climate change. But to a German artist, nothing seems to be as effective as a journey using a giant wire ball to make his voice heard. Arndt Drossel started his journey from his hometown Paderborn, West Germany, 3 months ago. The trip has so far taken him through more than 60 cities. He has completed the journey to the Scottish city of Glasgow, the venue of a major UN climate conference, Brussels, says he aims to tell people how they can help tackle climate change, now a key global problem. The German artist believes everyone has a duty to solve the problem to help next generations have a good future.
My wife and we have 5 children, and we want to give them a good and happy future. And everybody knows, I think, about the problems our Earth has, and we will have the same problem in several cities and countries.
The German artist says he has encouraged people to make specific promises to tackle climate change. He says his own pledge was to offset all his personal carbon emissions by using the sphere for his journey. Drossel says he will continue his efforts until the promises reach 1 million. Meet Clarion, a homemade polar bear whose mission is to raise awareness of climate change in a 500-kilometer pilgrimage to Glasgow. The 3-meter polar bear is work of British furniture maker Bamber Hoss. The bear weighs 17 kilograms and is made of bamboo, willow, and tissue paper. Hoss started his journey with Clarion from his hometown of Bishop's Castle in England to Glasgow. They accomplished their spectacular journey ahead of the United Nations COP26 climate conference in the Scottish city. Hoss says Clarion is a symbol of melting Arctic ice caps due to global warming.
He's called Clarion. Clarion the bear is not a bear. He is a metaphor. He's a symbol. It is a very obvious symbol that a polar bear represents the Arctic, not the Antarctic, and that is where, you know, some of the problems are with melting ice caps. Not all the problems, because they're elsewhere as well.
Hoss says his aim is to encourage people to pay attention to climate change. Environmental activists from across the UK and elsewhere on the continent have also embarked on a long journey on foot to reach the UN climate change conference in Glasgow.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by the late Ayatollah Agha Mujtaba Tahrani.
Thank you.
خداوند روی همون رحمت و لطفی که به بنده‌اش داره.
Allah shows his mercy and elegance to all of his servants, even those servants who recognize the presence of him in their lives but have shortcomings in their du'as and their manner of connection with Allah.
حرفای منو خوب گوش کن. میدونه این بنده
Listen to my words carefully. Allah knows this servant believes in him, but has some defects in his supplications. Now, what are these defects? The defect is when the servant thinks a person or entity other than Allah can help him. Allah helps such kind of servants.
این بنده ها رو کمکشون میکنه یا الله.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, where we listen to a speech by Ayatollah Agha Mujtaba Tehrani. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode, Fi Amanillah, and God bless you all.
IRIB English Radio.